Santa Muerte, or as he called her, Santissima Muerte, is the spirit of death. The beginning of this inquiry into where this mysterious saint came from just sort of revealed this unbelievable spiritual phenomena that is going on not only in Mexico, but in the United States and throughout the world. And he's created this shrine, his own forest, if you will, indoors. And there are several statues of the saint. There are piles of money, cigars, coins, and dollars. And he tells me, this is my mother. And she is the one that works for me. And she does many wonderful miracles. One follower is noted as saying, she listens to the prayers that the Virgin Mary won't listen to. Her image is that of, it looks very much like the classical image of the Virgin Mary, except her face is that of a skeleton. And if you don't know what you're doing when you call on the spirit, the results can be very deadly. I went searching for her history and found this amazing story of things I never knew were going on.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Banal of America Audio, with your host, Tim Banal.
What is going on, my friends? This is Tim Banal of BanalofAmerica.com with another edition of BOA Audio Season 5. We have got a really fantastic episode here for you, my friends. Definitely heading into some uncharted waters for BOA Audio. Before we get into this week's program, let me plug the Popcast initiative. I know a lot of BOA Audio listeners have already checked this out, but for those folks who didn't know that we've launched TPI at BOA, head on over to the website. You'll be able to find the Popcast initiative, or just punch it into iTunes and you'll be able to grab it that way as well. Hilarious stuff. Myself and Jeremy Vaney talking about pop culture and sharing some really great stories from our past. It's like the wild, wild west of audio, and definitely something you want to check out if you're a BOA audio aficionado. Now that we've taken care of that, let's talk about this week's edition of the program. Our guest is an extensive researcher of magico-religious cultures, Tony Kale, and he's joining us for primarily a discussion on Santa Muerte, Mexico's mysterious saint of death. He is the author of the book by that title, Santa Muerte, Mexico's Mysterious Saint of Death. You definitely want to check that out. It is bizarre and captivating. And in this conversation, we're going to cover a ton of stuff. It is really rapid fire as far as all the different areas we get into. We're going to find out about the mysterious origins of Santa Muerte, her rise to popularity in Mexico, how she's been adopted by both the downtrodden as well as the drug culture and criminal underground, and the Santa Muerte backlash from both the Mexican federal government as well as the Catholic Church. We'll also discuss Mexican folk medicine and folk saints like Lady of Guadalupe, Dr. Hernandez, and Jesus Malverde. In addition to his research into Santa Muerte, Tony has also studied all kinds of magico-religious cultures throughout Africa and Latin America, and as such, we're going to hear about Africa's war on witchcraft, voodoo, Santeria, strange stories from Tony's travels in Africa, the cattle mutilation phenomenon, and how that may or may not tie into magico-religious cultures, and of course, tons and tons more really mystical topics. Altogether, it is truly an enlightening look at some of the world's most intriguing and mysterious religions and cultures from a man who has seen them up close and personal. Tony Kale not only talks the talk, he's walked the walk in a big way. He has personally investigated a lot of these magico-religious cultures, and I think you'll find his insight and perspective on all this stuff to be quite fascinating. For those of you who are unfamiliar with Tony Kail, allow me to provide you with a little background on him. Tony Kail has traveled extensively throughout the United States and Africa, where he has spent 20 years studying magico-religious cultures. He has interviewed practitioners, observed ceremonies, and documented practices of numerous African and Latin folk healing traditions in order to educate public safety professionals about unfamiliar cultures. He has written for Fate Magazine, Law & Order, Police Quarterly, and the Journal of Counterterrorism. He's appeared on numerous television and radio shows, including the History Channel's UFO Hunters. Tony is the founder of Safe Spiritual Practices, a grassroots humanitarian project dedicated to providing health education programs to indigenous countries of East Africa, focusing on ending child exorcisms and violent witch hunts. His website is www.muertebook.info. Let me spell that one out for you. Muerte, M-U-E-R-T-E, book.info. Put it all together and it's muertebook.info. Check it out. Links, obviously, all over BOA as well. And now, without any further ado, let's rock and roll. This interview was recorded on July 16th, 2010. Tony Kail, talking about Santa Muerte and magico-religious cultures on BOA Audio Season 5. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another edition of Banal of America Audio. Coming at you with an interview here that I've been looking forward to for quite some time. Our guest is Tony Kail. He is the author of Santa Muerte, Mexico's Mysterious Saint of Death. Fascinating investigation into this really mysterious figure that has quite a following down in Mexico and has spread to America and the internet and is a really creepy looking character. And then has a lot of creepy attributes attached to it as well. And I've sort of heard about Santa Muerte in various places, but I never found as much, you know, fascinating material put together in one book as I did until I picked up Santa Muerte by Tony Kail. So I'm excited to have him here on the show. Tony Kail, welcome to BOA Audio.
And thank you so much for having me.
Well, let's start out, you know, with the obvious stuff, the bio background. Who is Tony Kail? How did you get interested in Santa Muerte in the first place?
Well, for about the last 20 years, I've been doing research on various religious cultures. Growing up here in the Bible Belt and working some with law enforcement through the years, when law enforcement in this area has encountered what some may call non-traditional religious cultures, and I use that rather loosely because here in the South, you know, non-traditional can mean everything from Hinduism to Wicca, you know.
Yeah.
And so many times law enforcement would encounter different groups when responding to calls and maybe not know necessarily where to put that group. And a lot of times there's a lot of misconceptions that anything non-traditional is Satanism and diabolical and things of that nature. So one of the things I've been doing the last 20 years is providing seminars for public safety agencies on understanding different religious cultures. We try to educate police and first responders on what they're going to see when they encounter different faiths. I myself am a student of religion, and my wife and I do some work in East Africa with a humanitarian group there. Back in, I guess it was about 2007, we were in Kenya and encountered a pretty brutal child exorcism going on there.
Oh, God.
And this was a young African boy who had epilepsy. And this belief that the child was possessed by demons had kind of been perpetrated throughout the community from one of the local churches there. And so we witnessed this child going through this pretty horrific exorcism and decided, you know, one of the things that there's a great need for there is education. And so we've been going with a medical team, and we're starting an educational program on safe spiritual practices there to educate African communities on safe approaches to everything from, you know, exorcism to witch hunts. Witch hunts are still a very real phenomena there, where if an elderly person betrays the wrong person, they can end up killed. And so there's a lot of education that's needed there. So that's kind of our background as far as some of the different areas we work in. And during the course of our research on religious cultures, a couple of years ago, I was in a Afro-Caribbean religious temple, and the priest of this particular temple had allowed me to come in and document some of his group's rituals. And we were talking and talking a little bit about how some of the different Afro-Caribbean religious faiths, such as Santeria, Palo, and Voodoo, sort of get a bad rap in the press many times because, you know, it's typically when someone's arrested for killing a cat or selling dope and using different cultural aspects. And then the mainstream media all of a sudden picks up and goes, oh, you know, Santeria is for drug dealers or Voodoo is for people who are out doing crazy things. So with this great misunderstanding, we were trying to kind of build some education by documenting some actual rituals and actual customs of groups.
Yeah.
And the leader of this particular temple shared with me that one of the biggest criminal incidents that's well known that harmed his community was the incident that happened in Matamoros, Mexico, back in the late 80s. And in Matamoros, there was a group of drug runners that had picked up practices of some pretty traditional Afro-Caribbean faiths, such as Santeria and Palo Mayombe, mm-hmm. and they sort of twisted them and created their own rituals. And in the midst of this, they ended up murdering over 12 individuals.
Oh, God.
And using them in rituals.
Oh, man.
So when this comes out in the press, you know, the first thing the press says, oh, look, you know, here are people practicing this religion. That's why they're killing people. And so this myth is perpetrated that practitioners of these different African faiths are doing human sacrifices because of this group. And I sort of presented this situation to the priest when he told me about it. I said, well, you know, how does that group stick out from the mainstream religious communities? And he said, well, you know, Tony, he said, I think the reason they got caught is because they invoked a spirit they shouldn't have invoked. And he said, Santa Muerte, or as he called her, Santissima Muerte, is the spirit of death. And they called on her. And if you don't know what you're doing when you call on a spirit, the results can be very deadly. Well, this is the first time, you know, researching religious culture for years that I'd ever heard the name Santissima Muerte. And he went on to explain that she's a very old spirit that's from Mexico. And in fact, he showed me an image of her in his temple. And her image is that of, it looks very much like the classical image of the Virgin Mary, except her face is that of a skeleton. And he explained that you don't call on her unless you know what you're doing. And as a result, that's why that group sort of imploded. And of course, that's his spiritual worldview on that. But something I found very fascinating, that particular group had somewhat imploded by this spiritual disaster as a result of using Santa Muerte. So as time went on, a couple of years later, I had a friend in the pagan community call me. She had discovered a spiritual supply shop in her area. And she said, Tony, you've got to meet this guy. There's a man who runs this shop, and he's an older Latin gentleman, and he calls on Santa Muerte, the spirit of death. And I said, oh, well, you know, definitely, I'd like to meet him. So she takes me to meet this guy. And as I would get there, they take me into the back of this guy's store. And he has a room that's sealed off from the rest of the store.
Yeah.
And as he opens the door, I can see into the room. It's completely dark except for the light coming from some candles and some Christmas lights. Huh. And as we walk into the room, I start hearing the sound of crickets. And it's, you know, sort of giving the impression that I'm walking out into a wooded area. And I start to see branches hanging. And he has several plants and trees in this back room. And as I get closer to the light, I notice there's a shrine that's set up. And in the midst of the shrine are several statues of Santa Muerte. And he's created the shrine within a small, his own forest, if you will, indoors. And there are several statues of the saint. There are piles of money, cigars, coins and dollars. And he tells me, this is my mother. And she is the one that works for me. And she does many wonderful miracles.
Wow.
So it was a very eerie experience. Not long after that, I began to see in some of the Mexican newspapers. Of course, now when we talk about Mexican newspapers, our newspapers here are nothing like the newspapers out of Mexico. You know, the newspapers out of Mexico, they don't just talk about a shooting. They'll show the victim of the shooting. You know, they don't talk about an automobile accident. They show the guy who was beheaded in the accident.
Oh, geez.
So they're very wide open, you know, with their journalistic liberties there.
Yeah.
And I noticed in some of the Mexican newspapers that there was images of victims of drug-related violence from some of the drug cartels, and they were wearing necklaces with pendants with the smiling skull of Santa Muerte. And I started seeing more and more of her, and it was almost like from that first moment of seeing her in that Palo temple that I started seeing her everywhere I went, whether it be in magazines, whether it be on store shelves of spiritual supply stores. And so I started asking questions about, you know, where did she come from? And I would get a number of different answers. You know, I would have a Santero, a priest in the Santeria religion, tell me, oh, I hear she's from the Aztecs. And then I would talk to someone who practiced Latin folk magic, curanderismo, and they would say, oh, she's the dark side of the Virgin Mary. And so I never was able to get a concrete answer. And so it sort of spurred me to start looking for answers of where she came from. And the beginning of this inquiry into where this mysterious saint came from just sort of revealed this unbelievable spiritual phenomena that is going on not only in Mexico, but in the United States and throughout the world.
Yeah, I mean, I was stunned by just how pervasive Santa Muerte is. And you kind of already gave us sort of like a thumbnail description of this character. Now, I noticed a lot of similarities between the Santa Muerte and the Grim Reaper. Is this something where it's sort of like adopted, one's adopted the other's sort of attributes, or is there a difference, or are they pretty much the same thing, or what, you know, what's the correlation between those two figures?
Well, the Grim Reaper is one of the many cultural symbols for death that we have. In fact, the Grim Reaper specifically is said to be connected to God Cronos. And really, the Grim Reaper and Santa Muerte are just one of the many masks of death. We can look through world cultures, whether they be Asian, African, Indo-European, and find representatives of death. For instance, in Haitian voodoo, spirits of the dead are known as the Gede. And the Gede many times are represented by skeletons and grinning skulls. And last year I attended a voodoo ceremony in New Orleans, and they celebrated a festival for the Gede. And at this festival, you would see papier-mâché skeletons and coffins and grinning skulls. And when we look at where Santa Muerte comes from in the Mexican culture, the skeletal figure is such a common symbol for death. You know, when we look at the Aztecs had a lord and lady that ruled their underworld, and they're very strikingly similar to Santa Muerte. Santa Muerte is just another one of these archetypes of death.
Yeah.
It's just a different mask. You know, in Mexican culture, I found that there was no shortage of that figure as a representation for death. In Mexico and in many Latin American communities in the U.S., November 1st is celebrated the Day of the Dead. And of course, there's celebrations with skeletons and candy skulls, and you know, Mexican folklore is filled with stories about death as a spirit. One of the more popular ones is the legend of La Llorona. La Llorona, or the crying woman. And her legend is very popular in many Mexican communities, where it's said that this lady fell in love with a man. And the lady had a couple of children, and the story varies. But most of the time, it's pretty much along the same theme, and that is that this man said, you know, I'll take you, but I don't want those children. And so the lady took the children down to a lake and drowned them. And when she realized what she had done, she went crazy. And so the legend says that she roams the countryside looking for children to kidnap, and that from the back she appears as a beautiful woman with long flowing black hair, but with a skeletal face. And this is there's actually, you know, this is actually told to, I have a good friend who is from Mexico, and she said, yeah, this was told to us as kids. You know, this is our boogeyman. And so there's no shortage of that image of that grim reaperish skeletal figure.
Yeah.
In Mexican culture and throughout the world.
Seems that way, yeah. Now, in the book, you note that Santa Muerte is just one of many Mexican folk saints. And I guess talk a little bit about, you know, some of these other folk saints, because some of them are pretty popular with the criminal underground and also just have some pretty cool stories behind them. So, you know, aside from the Santa Muerte, what are some of these other folk saints in Mexico?
The folk saints from Latin America are a very fascinating facet of their culture. The folk saints tend to develop in areas where there's a need that is not met by the establishment. Let me explain it like this. If you live in a community where, say, smallpox was a very popular sickness or a very popular disease among members of the community,
yeah,
but yet there was no saint in your particular pantheon of saints that addressed that need, maybe there was someone in that community who helped children with smallpox. Maybe they were considered as a very powerful spiritual person. And after they die, they may be venerated as a folk saint. They may be considered a saint by only a small region of people.
Okay.
And so typically these folk saints aren't necessarily canonized by the Catholic Church.
Yeah.
I've asked a friend of mine who's Catholic about Santa Muerte, and he said, oh, you know, make no mistake, she is not part of traditional Catholic saints. And so these folk saints are kind of in a league of their own. One of the most revered is Our Lady of Guadalupe, as far as having a lot of folk followings. Our Lady of Guadalupe is said to have appeared to a Mexican peasant on a mountain near Mexico City, and she performed miracles. She made flowers grow in winter. And she made her image appear on his mantle, his clothing. And it's believed among some of the folk followers of Our Lady of Guadalupe that she is actually a reincarnated Aztec goddess. And so there's a little bit of syncretism mixed in there.
Yeah.
Another very interesting folk saint in Latin America is Dr. Hernandez. And Dr. Hernandez was originally a Venezuelan physician, and he was known for his charity work among children and among the impoverished. And Dr. Hernandez would go and help the poor without charging them any fee. And so he was seen as this great spiritual man, and he was killed in an automobile accident. And after his death, it became very popular to take images of Dr. Hernandez and place them in a shrine and pray to him in hopes that he would heal sickness. And so many times you'll see this figure of this little man in a suit with a top hat, and that's Dr. Hernandez. And it's believed he has that power to heal. When we talk about the less desirables, if you will, one of the more popular folk saints that comes up typically alongside Santa Muerte is Jesus Malverde. And Jesus Malverde is typically known as the narco saint or the patron saint of drug dealers. Jesus Malverde was a legendary bandit and has this folklore surrounding him that he was actually not such a bad guy. He was actually more of a Robin Hood type guy who robbed from the rich and gave to the poor. And so now you've got groups of folks who follow Malverde and believe that they can pray to him and that he will protect them from being arrested. I have friends in law enforcement who tell me stories of where they've arrested guys who are, you know, selling cocaine or selling marijuana, and they're wearing amulets dedicated to Malverde, and they say they believe that he was going to protect them in their work. One anthropologist that's been sharing with me, who's done a lot of research on Malverde, shares that he is finding an increasingly larger audience of followers of Malverde that aren't involved in criminal activity, that they just believe that Malverde is a good guy who's kind of misunderstood, and you know that it is a minority that is involved in crime and following Malverde.
Interesting. Okay. Makes you wonder when you hear about this pantheon of folk saints down in Latin America. It's like, what does that say about our country? Are there folk saints like here in America that you would even, you know, kind of put in the same realm? Or, I mean, are we just venerate our celebrities or something?
I don't know. That's a good question. You know, we look and many times make this judgment as Westerners that, oh, you know, look at this pitiful population venerating these folk saints, but yet we'll prop up $1 million for Paris Hilton.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, who's in the worst for that? So
exactly. Yeah.
So, it's, you know, it all depends. It's all about worldview. It's where you're coming from. You know, if I was raised in a village or a community where one particular person provided spiritual care, and that particular person meant a lot to us, I can totally understand that concept of a folk saint.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. If anything, I was making a judgment about our country. You know, you wonder if there's anything beneath the veneer at times.
Exactly.
Now, in the book, you point out that Santa Muerte appeals to those that are, quote, in the dark, the impoverished, the social outcasts, the criminals, because they don't feel like that the traditional Catholic saints, that their prayers will get answered by those traditional Catholic saints. So I guess just talk about that sort of mindset as to why Santa Muerte appeals to this, you know, class of people, I guess you'd say.
Yeah, that's a great question, because that's one of the first things that I discovered. It kind of perplexed me. You know, I heard for so long this stories of Santa Muerte as this patron saint of the criminals or patron saint of bad folks. And then I started meeting some of her followers, and I'm meeting little elderly Mexican ladies who have probably never stole a piece of candy in their life.
Yeah.
Or meeting, practicing neo-pagan practitioners who are very socially acceptable, socially conscious folks who are not involved in criminal activity, but they include this image in their pantheon of gods and goddesses or saints. And the more I looked into it, I found out that it's just kind of where you're coming from as far as how you see her. One follower is noted as saying she listens to the prayers that the Virgin Mary won't listen to. And you kind of begin to understand that worldview. There's a really cool story told in Mexican folklore about how a peasant had two chickens, and he had two children, and he fed one chicken to his children. And he was going to eat the other one, but he decided he would wait and just kind of pray. And during the night, he's visited by different spiritual figures. And he tells these spiritual figures who ask him for the little bit of food he has left, he tells them, no, you know, you're unfair to me. And you treat some people with respect and give them food and money, but yet my family's starving. And at the end of the evening, the spirit of death shows up at his house in the form of a skeletal figure, much like Muerte, and asks for food. And he says, I will give you food because you are fair to everyone. Death comes to the rich and the poor. And so I began to, you know, kind of understand this worldview that Muerte is not only this archetype that's valuable to, say, the criminal, but is also an archetype that's valuable to someone who feels like death is, you know, the great equalizer.
Yeah.
And I think, too, when we look at Santa Muerte, most of us who are not around death constantly, you know, we kind of get freaked out by this eerie image of death. But if we were to be in a community where death is common, if I lived in Mexico and there's wars in the streets going on from drug cartels and the police, death is a constant neighbor. And so I could understand, you know, that particular view.
Yeah, as you say, we don't really know the exact origins of Santa Muerte, but do we know sort of like when she exploded into, like, you know, the popular consciousness in the area? Do you know what I mean? Like, we may not be able to trace it back, the original origins of the deity or the figure, but, you know, when did it seem to start showing up all of a sudden?
She has been around in Mexico and known among the Mexican communities for several years. She's only kind of been a recent phenomena here in the U.S., you know, maybe the last, probably less than 20 years, probably around 10 years, as far as being really well known.
Yeah.
And in Mexico, one of the first public shrines was set up a couple of years ago in Tepito, Mexico. And there was a lady who basically took a statue of Santa Muerte and closed it in glass and placed it outside her home and started out a very humble shrine to the death saint. And now, on a regular biweekly basis, there are literally thousands of people that come out. In fact, the cover photo on the book is a shot from Tepito. Thousands of men and women and children come out and perform these celebrations. There are mass prayer services. Mariachi bands play songs for Santa Muerte. And so, you know, it's just been over the last couple of years where she's really started to explode. But as far as when she first kind of came onto the scene, you know, we'll find opinions here and there. But again, it's just there's so much data, and it's very hard to pinpoint exactly when she stepped onto the scene.
Yeah. Well, I guess talk a little bit about how the drug culture down there in Mexico has adopted Santa Muerte to such a huge degree, because I was surprised just in general, but about how big the drug culture is in Mexico, to the point where it's almost like, it sounded from reading your book like that it was just like this accepted part of the overall, you know, society down there. It was take you a little back when you read it like that.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, it comes as a huge surprise to many Americans that there's been, you know, announcements in the news over the last couple of months about sending federal troops to Mexico and to the border. And I think it comes as a surprise because a lot of us have not been aware of the magnitude of what's going on there with the Mexican drug cartels.
Yeah.
The Mexican drug cartels, I tell you, in their methods of violence, rival Al-Qaeda in many instances. There are mass beheadings, there are targeted kidnappings, there are assassinations. There's some very dirty stuff going on there in Mexico. I thought it was fascinating. I was contacted by a drug war analyst, this particular analyst used to work for the United States Army, and she kind of keeps an eye on things there in Mexico and reports on the happenings with the drug cartels. And she contacted me about a story that came out actually in Reuters News saying that the Mexican police were starting to practice voodoo and Santeria to magically protect themselves.
Oh, wow.
Because drug dealers were arming themselves with what they were calling Mexican black magic. And it was fascinating to see this story that there were authorities coming out saying, you know, the magical operations of the drug cartels have gotten so heavy that the police feel that they need to magically protect themselves. And I know that seems extremely far out there for a lot of us to understand, but again, it's within that cultural worldview. The cartels that are using Santa Muerte, there are tons of stories, reports coming out of Mexico. We had one report where Mexican authorities had discovered shrines to Santa Muerte in a house. The whole interior of the house was painted into this enormous shrine, and it had an image of the owner of the house, a leader of a drug cartel, kissing the hand of Santa Muerte.
Wow.
And just a very eerie landscape type of mural. We had a case that kind of bled out of Mexico, pardon the pun, but bled out of Mexico into Texas, where members of a drug cartel actually murdered one of their rivals and stabbed this guy, and they took his blood and put it in a champagne glass and drank a toast to Santa Muerte. And this is documented. The stories coming out of Mexico are amazing. You know, Nuevo Laredo, Mexico, is considered kind of to be the gateway to the drug war between the cartels. Mm-hmm. And when you go to Nuevo Laredo, there are two large statues of Santa Muerte there, kind of welcoming you into the gateway into the drug war.
Jeez. Yeah, it's like this presence that's like looming over the whole scene, it seems like.
Yeah, it's a very heavy very heavy symbolism, you know. It's definitely a symbol of the air of death that is in the air there in Mexico. There was a case where 11 members of a cartel were beheaded and their heads were placed at a shrine to Santa Muerte. You might remember a few years ago there were a couple of teenagers in Texas who were arrested as being members of a sleeper cell belonging to a drug cartel out of Mexico. These two teenagers were taken off the streets of Laredo, Texas, and taken into Mexico and trained for a drug cartel. And when police did the teens, one of the teens had his back decorated with an image of Santa Muerte. So she's definitely permeating this entire drug war that's going on.
As you point out in the book here now, this thing has become so, you know, co-opted by the drug culture that there's been this serious backlash against Santa Muerte by not only the Mexican government, but also the Catholic Church, who I'm sure, you know, aren't really happy with the ensuing popularity of Santa Muerte, whether it's by the criminal element or even, you know, just the downtrodden in Mexico. You know, it's always sort of a turf war with the churches anyway, so I'm sure they're not too happy about it either. And as you point out in the book, there's been quite a backlash by both groups, the Catholic Church and the Mexican government. So I guess talk a little bit about that backlash and especially what the Mexican government did to sort of dissuade the worship of Santa Muerte.
Yeah, in 2008, the Archdiocese of Mexico City makes this public announcement that devotion Santa Muerte is not compatible with traditional Catholicism. And this started sort of a public outcry by Catholics there in Mexico. One of the big reasons for this outcry is one of the main Santa Muerte churches utilizes the name Catholic in their official title. And so the Catholic Church, the traditional Catholic Church there, took great offense to that. And so there was this massive outcry against Santa Muerte. And then we started seeing somewhat of a ramping up by the Mexican government. In 2009, if you lived in Texas or Mexico, you could have turned on the TV and seen footage of bulldozers being driven by members of the Mexican government crushing temples and shrines dedicated to Santa Muerte. The Mexican kind of cried a official war against Santa Muerte, and they destroyed over shrines throughout Tijuana and areas of Mexico. And the government's reasoning for this was they said these were places that drug runners would go and hang out, would go and receive, you know, blessings for protections of shipments. And so by destroying these shrines, they felt this was sort of engaging, you know, the drug cartels. We even found evidence in some of the Mexican newspapers where public shrines had been built in areas of Mexico City, and people had come and destroyed them using chemicals. You know, it's becoming a very, very heavy air there with those who practice the veneration of Santa Muerte, and then the government kind of cracking down on that.
I guess this must be just like a different sort of like law sort of thing, right? Because, I mean, even if you don't see, like, the U.S. government, you know, I'm sure they would like to bulldoze mosques and stuff to, you know, go after terrorists and stuff like that, but they can't really do that. So I guess it must be sort of like a different legal parameters down there in Mexico, right?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, we're very, very fortunate. We can worship anyone or anything as long as we're not hurting anyone or breaking any laws. You know, but I tell you, in Mexico, you know, it's a whole different town. And you definitely don't want to be arrested in Mexico. It's very different rule.
Yeah, I can imagine, yeah. Well, I've heard some stories, but probably not even the worst ones. Well, now it seems like this Santa Muerte phenomenon, now it's spreading to America and the internet and stuff, as you point out in the book. So talk a little bit about sort of how it's creeping its way into America now. You kind of got to wonder, too, if it's like how we talked earlier about how it appeals to sort of the impoverished and stuff, especially in light of just the financial situation here in America, you know, if that might have something to do with Santa Muerte spreading to America as well. You know, we need, you know, people are turning to whatever they can to get some help in these troubled times.
You know, yeah, and that definitely, you know, begs the question of, you know, are we seeing people following Santa Muerte as a result of desperation in this country? One of the things we're seeing in the United States that's, you know, you could only smile and say only in America, is the customization of Santa Muerte into a pop icon. We have here in the U.S., in fact, in the book, we document, you know, probably 20 or 30 pop bands named after Santa Muerte.
Oh, wow.
There are horror movies, suspense novels, T-shirts. Nike has a line of tennis shoes with Santa Muerte on the tennis shoe. And it's amazing, you know, only in America. You know, one of the facets we're seeing of Santa Muerte as part of the Western pop culture is the growth of her presence on the internet. You know, there's Santa Muerte chat rooms, there's Santa Muerte web pages. We're even seeing the growth of virtual temples online, where you can go into and offer prayers. You can email your prayers. You can chat with a priest. There's actually a Santa Muerte church out of Los Angeles that does a live broadcast and broadcasts their services over the net. You know, only in America.
That's for sure. Yeah, absolutely. Now, when you were doing all this research into the book and everything, were you ever sort of like warned off from investigating Santa Muerte? Because it seems, I mean, this thing is creepy. It's a little bit off-putting. And I know, obviously, that it's been adopted by some dangerous folks. So did you ever get sort of warned off, or what was the reaction as you tried to investigate Santa Muerte?
Actually, no. You know, most of the folks that I interviewed were very open. In fact, it was surprising. I think I kind of took them by surprise to ask about what they feel about her. One of the things I found out a long time ago is, you know, we have two perceptions, and that is what we think people believe versus what they actually believe many times. And the only way we can find that out is through interviewing and through gathering information through that way. So, you know, I would go to the supply shops, and I would go to the temples and ask them, you know, what do you believe? Where are you coming from? And for the most, were met with very good responses. People were open. I was never warned off. You know, the ones that did talk about her as some sort of dark figure typically always referred to other people doing that. You know, they would say, yeah, I do hear that some pray to her to protect them to do something nefarious. I don't do that.
Yeah.
But I hear there are some that do. So I was never really warned off, if you will.
All right, that's cool, yeah. I found it interesting, too, in the book that you mentioned that St. Jude, who is a pretty well-known saint to, you know, folks of the Catholic faith and everything, has also kind of been adopted by nefarious forces, which is interesting in its own sort of way, because I know a lot of people pray to St. Jude for help, and I think you say in the book, like, impossible situations. And then in turn, drug runners find themselves in impossible situations, so they turn to St. Jude. I thought that was pretty interesting.
Yeah, it's, you know, there's a couple of cases where different law enforcement agencies had intercepted narcotics that were being sold by different criminal groups, and they found that they were using statues of St. Jude to protect their shipments. In fact, we had one situation where it wasn't St. Jude, it was actually Santa Muerte was being used. They were praying to her and saying that she would make all their drugs invisible to the police. that's specific worldview. And you know, and the majority of Catholics that I know that would honor St. Jude would say, no way, you know, there's no way he would be, you know, he would give favor to someone asking for help like that. But obviously someone does view him in that particular view.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I guess, you know, like you said, different worldviews, right? I mean,
absolutely.
If you're into that scene, you got to get all the help you can get, I guess.
That's right.
Now, in the book also, you profile a lot of sort of like the different like objects and stuff like that that are like the Santa Muerte statues and stuff, and how varied they are, and how each one has sort of like a different thing like attributed to them and stuff like that. So I guess talk a little bit about sort of like the sheer variety of Santa Muerte emblems or whatever, statues and stuff like that, that are so popular out there. Because it's like, just listening to this, the people who, you know, aren't from the area and everything, I'm sure are going to be really surprised just by the sheer variety of stuff that's down there.
Absolutely. You know, there are, I was amazed when I started doing research on Santa Muerte into how many different names she has. She goes by Santa Muerte, Santissima Muerte. They call her the Lady of Light, the Sister of Light, Powerful Lady, the Skinny Girl, Powerful Mistress of Death, and there's a ton of others. And so there's all these different manifestations of the image. And, you know, her typical image is that of the skeletal figure in the long flowing robe. And she's traditionally holding a scythe, an agricultural blade. And the symbolism behind that is said by many represent a tool that can cut away negative energies or negative influences. Again, all of this depends on who you talk to, because there is no central sacred text or there's no central teaching. There's all these different varieties of what she means and how you follow her. Some of the images of Santa Muerte include items like a globe of the earth, which kind of demonstrates her power over the earth. There are images with an hourglass. There are images of her with an owl. And the symbolism behind the owl is pretty fascinating, because one of her followers told me, you know, the owl is this very wise creature that can see into darkness.
Yeah.
So that's why that particular animal is affiliated with her. You'll see statues of Santa Muerte depicted in many different colors, black, white, red, gold, green. I saw one last evening that was multicolored, and each one of the colors represents a different power associated with the icon. I've seen images of Santa Muerte that could fit in your pocket, and I've seen images that I've had to look up to see the face of. In Mexico, there's a temple dedicated to the death saint, and she actually is the image in front of the temple is over 20 feet tall.
Wow!
And it's a very massive image of Saint Death. A lot of the images, if you find one, if you'll turn it over, if you're able to turn it over physically and look under the base of the figure, many of them contain different ingredients to give them a magical charge. And typically under the base of the image, you'll see it looks like a clear coat of wax. And there'll be items like coins, beans, and rice, and different materials that have sort of philosophical symbolism connected to them. And again, that differs between practitioners as to what those different ingredients mean.
David St. Huggins. I must admit I've never heard anybody with that name.
What's an unusual name? Well, he was an unusual saint. He's not a very well-known saint.
You're listening to Banal of America Audio.
Oh, there actually is, there was a St.
Yes.
Huggins.
That's right, yes.
Yeah, what was he the saint of?
He was the patron saint of quality footwear.